Morning.
You know, when you go to a conference or a convention, you just never know who you're going to meet. Over 22 years ago, 1997 to be exact, my husband and I were at a Foundation Driving Blindness conference in Washington, D.C. One of the excursions was cruising down the Potomac River on this huge party boat.
Potomac.
We were at a table, and guess who was at the table?
Who?
Dan and Leslie. And that was the first time they ever met.
No way!
And Jim and I thought, ooh, there are little sparks of chemistry. And Dan and Leslie have been happily married for 21 years. Dan has a very impressive background, and so let's start with his work background. He has been with Siemens Energy since 1989 to 2014 when he retired, and he started as a computer programmer, and later, towards retirement, he had the position of senior project manager with 40 direct reports. And then, for diversification, before this, he owned and operated a pizza parlor. It was DG's. But his claim to fame was at Disney World.
Oh, yeah.
For 5 years, he was our beloved Goofy. Burr Bear and Tigger. So, I mean, how many people can say, we knew Goofy and Burr Bear and Tigger, right? And he got his Bachelor's of Science degree in Finances and also the Master's degree in Accounting from the University of Florida. And his blind associations include the Foundation Fighting Blindness since 1980 to the present. The American Council of the Blind from 1990 to the present. And he's very impressive. I'm just going to give you more information. And then he was also affiliated with the Florida Rehab Council. And he was president of the the Greater Orlando Council for the Blind. And then later on, first vice president for the Florida Council of the Blind. Now, with the American Council for the Blind, Dan has been the first vice president since
1700.
Work with me here, Dan. Anyway, from 2017 till present, and he was also the director for 5 years from 2012 to 2017. And he continues to be for the last 7 years the audio description committee chair, and for the last 6 years he is co-chair of the resource development committee. So let's give a warm aloha to Dan Spoon.
Aloha!
And I was going to actually save that story for the banquet tonight, so you have to talk twice, but first of all, I want to say thank you so much to Art, to Don, and special thanks to Warren and all the leaders here in HAB. It's really an honor for Leslie and I to be here this weekend, and special aloha, welcome, or regards from Kim Charlson, our president, and Eric Bridges, our executive director. So thank you all so much for giving us the opportunity for my first time ever to come to Hawaii.
Aloha.
And I have to elaborate a little bit about Vicky's story. So I am cruising down the Potomac River all by myself. I come up from Orlando, Florida, and I'm sitting sitting next to Vicki and Jen, and we're kind of chatting. They lived in San Francisco at the time. And there were a couple of people sitting around to my right, and there were two open chairs to the left of Vicki. I was sitting to the right of Jen, and there were two open seats to the left of Vicki. And all of a sudden, here come these two women bounding into the dinner cruise. They were a little late because their plane was late arriving from Vegas. And so it was Leslie and her sister, Anita. And so Anita, who was pretty boisterous, she proclaims, "I really have to pee back." And so Jim and Vicki say, "Well, we'll be happy to escort you to the bathroom, Anita." And so they get up and take Anita to the bathroom. And I look over to the left and see the most gorgeous woman I've ever seen. And I'm only two seats away, so I say hello. And she says hello. And the music comes on. Now, I'm dating myself a little bit. But you all remember the song, The Macarena? Yeah. I wasn't a big dancer to start with, but I surely wasn't going to get out there and do a dance where you have to do all these hand motions and movements and all that stuff. But Leslie says, "Would you like to go dance? I can teach you the Macarena." And I said, "Most certainly." So we got to know each other that day, literally that day, as we sat between Vicki and Jim. And continued talking over the convention, and then I invited her down to visit me in Orlando, Florida, from Las Vegas. And after a year of cross-country dating, we got married. So we literally met between Jim and Vicki Kennedy. And Vicki called and said, "Are you Dan Spoon from Foundation?" I said, "Oh my gosh, what a small world!" So you just never know what can happen. So, American Council of the Blind. This talk is really dedicated to American Council of the Blind and what we've been doing for the last year. And it's been a really good year for the American Council of the Blind. We have now fully in place a strategic plan, which has five different action teams. And those five action teams are advocacy, membership and affiliates, marketing and communications, development, which Marjorie talked about a little earlier, and convention. So those five action teams are working on a series of steps to improve the American Council of the Blind. If I first kind of look at advocacy, we had our director, our previous director of advocacy, Tony Stevens, was in that role as the chair of that committee. He has recently taken a new position, and just on February 11th, we hired a new director of advocacy and government affairs and government relations, and that's Clark Rackfull. And so you all get a chance to see Clark's name coming up. He comes to us from the National Industries for the Blind, where he served as their advocacy director for the past 2 years. So he's now the chair of that particular committee. And a year ago, we hired a new advocacy specialist, Claire Stanley, who was originally from California, now lives in the D.C. area, of course. She works, both of them work out of the Alexandria office. And together, we've really been able to accomplish a lot of things on the advocacy front this year. The first, which one of our speakers earlier, Terrence from the National Library Service, talked to us about, we finally, after about 13 years of advocacy, worked with us and several other of the consumer groups to get the Marrakesh Treaty totally ratified and signed into law. So the United States became the 50th state to ratify the Marrakesh Treaty, which really allows the free exchange of materials across international borders without fear of the whole copyright. So the World Intellectual Property Organization worked with the forming of the Marrakesh Treaty, and our own executive director, I was talking to him the other day, Eric Bridges, attended the initial meeting in Switzerland, in Geneva, Switzerland, in 2007. So it took 12 years of work across international lines to really make this come to fruition. But we're not quite there yet. We have the law in place, and now, as Terrence talked about earlier, the next piece is going to be implementation. Now, I was so naive, I thought, okay, the law's passed, let's start exchanging Braille materials and audio books, and let's get going with this stuff. No, of course it doesn't work anywhere near that easy. You have to go through the whole process of certifying authorities that will work to exchange the material, putting the whole consortium in place that allows the material to be exchanged. The National Library Service has a rule in place called the reciprocity rule, which right now they can only exchange materials if they get like value materials in return. This is going to hurt or delay the transfer of materials because the U.S., as you can imagine, has so much more than other countries. Mm-hmm. And so they're working that out. They're working on the ruling associated with that. And it's going to take a little while. We spoke with Karen Kinniger, as you all know, who's the director of the National Library Service. And her and Kim Charlson are actually going to be on a panel this year at our convention sponsored by LUA and the International Relations Committee to talk about what's going to be involved with the next steps. But implementation is going to take a little while to happen. But it's exciting. We got there. It's, as we learned with all advocacy, the first step is to get the law passed. Then you've got to go through the regulations and finally get to the implementation. So we're working very hard at it, but it's going to take probably a little bit longer. Some of the regional libraries are going to be able to exchange materials more quickly. But it's going to happen. So that's a really, 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 really good accomplishment for all of us. Next, this is kind of a fun one, but it just kind of intrigues me. So for those of us in the newer generation, which is not me, but those of us in the audience that you know do a lot of texting and this type of stuff, have you heard of emojis?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, everybody's heard of emojis, right?
Yes.
All right. Well, Eric Bridges, our executive director, has worked with Apple for the last 2 years on getting new emojis qualified that would represent blindness. Now, again, I never knew that all this type of stuff was in place. But if you want a new emoji to be part of the lexicon, you first have to get an organization to sponsor it. You then have to go to the International Emoji Association that needs to approve emojis. And so Eric worked with Apple, and Apple agreed to sponsor a whole series, I think it was about 10 or 12 emojis that represented disability. Of that, three represented blindness. There was one with a guide dog, one with a man with a cane, and a woman with a cane. And so those three emojis were approved first by Apple, taken to the International Emoji Board, and recently, here last month, they have been approved. So you will now see three new emojis that you can use to represent blindness. That's just kind of cool. Happened on the advocacy front. Another thing, just real quickly, and I won't spend too much time on it, but we did have our legislative seminar last week. Had a chance to walk on Capitol Hill, and we're really kind of three imperatives that really were stressed at this year's walk and in our legislative seminar. Maybe some of you might have heard the discussion on ACB radio. The first one is one that's kind of new for us this year, and it's really having an accessible, audible diabetes device for continuous glucose
meter
or monitoring. It's called, I think, CGM is what they're, everything's got an acronym. And so you may have seen the one on TV called Freestyle Libre. Are any of you all with diabetes? I'm trying that. It does have an app that you can use with your iPhone or iDevices as well as Android devices, but it's not really accessible. And so what we're finding as the medical revolution takes place and everything moves more and more digital, there's a real opportunity for us to take this technology and make it accessible for us as blind people. There's nothing that's stopping it from a technology standpoint. It's all about insurance companies and regulations, and we really believe we can get the CMS with Medicare and Medicaid to go ahead and require these devices be accessible. It will open the floodgates for all of us to have accessible medical equipment. So that's something that we're working very hard on. Thank you. That we had an imperative on was about autonomous vehicles. So has everybody heard about autonomous vehicles, self-driving cars?
Tesla.
How many of us, we actually, when we walked on Capitol Hill, we took everybody a little Converse white or multicolored tennis shoe on a keychain and said, this is because we're here walking today on Capitol Hill to help blind and visually impaired people, but also because we're tired of walking everywhere that we have to go if we want to be independent. So what we'd really like to have is some self-driving vehicles, you know. We'd like to have autonomous vehicles. And so there's an act called the AV START Act, or Autonomous Vehicle START Act, which really allows three different things. One, it allows for some of the cleanup of regulations so that the industry can start doing a better job of testing these vehicles. And then looking at, think about all the things that are going to be disruptive when we go to autonomous vehicles. Insurance, trial lawyers. When an autonomous vehicle hits somebody, who do you sue, right? I mean, there's people who make their living off of this, right? So they're very interested. And so there's so many things that are going to have to change out there. And then the third thing that's happening, I don't know if it's happened yet here in Hawaii, but Hawaii. My southern accent gets me in trouble there sometimes. But what's happened is each state is passing their own autonomous vehicle legislation. And so as you cross state borders, and at least in the mainland, that gets to be a really big problem. And so what do we do so we have some federal guidelines in place, so we have some regulations that all the states can adhere to? And then the third area, which is an area we've advocated for many years, was on low vision, durable medical equipment, that it be covered by Medicare and Medicaid.
Yeah, yeah.
For all of those with low vision, we know that right now it's totally excluded due to the Eyeglass Exclusion Act. So right now, anything with a lens is not covered by Medicare or Medicaid. So if you've got an Optilec, a CCTV, a Pebble Mini, any of those things, none of them are covered under durable medical equipment. So we've really got to work again to put a demonstration project in place, small amount of money, but really with an opportunity to get past that eyeglass exclusion. So those are kind of the three things we advocated for on Capitol Hill. I thought you all would be interested to hear about those. Next, I'd like to talk a little bit about our convention. How many of you are going to go to the convention this year? We've got lots of wonderful tours, a couple that are really, I call them like mega tours. They're going,
Niagara.
The first Saturday, they're going to go to Cooperstown to the Baseball Hall of Fame, which that's an all-day trip.
Go Natalie.
They go to Natalie. And then afterwards, on the Friday after the convention's over, after the banquet, they're going to do an all-day tour to Niagara Falls.
Yes.
So those are going to be a couple of really big. And then, of course, we have all the standard tours, you know, the chocolate factory. There's something that kind of interests me called the adult beverage tour, which I think goes to a winery, a distillery, and something else. So, that one sounds pretty exciting. I'm in the city. Lots of really good tours. It's also elections this year, so we'll be electing the new slate of officers for ACB. Those elections will be held on the Thursday, last day of the convention. And then our banquet speaker this year, our performer, is Jennifer Owens, a Christian artist. I don't know if you all have heard about her, so she's everybody's excited to see her. So those are kind of some of the things that are going on at the convention. Something we started last year with at the convention was continuing education credits. So the American Council of the Blind offered 53 programs to get continuing education credits. And this was associated with your orientation and mobility, rehab teaching, accessible technology instructors. So there was really a lot of opportunity for people to come to the convention and get continuing education credits. So that was a wonderful thing. Talking a little bit about membership, our chair of our membership committee is Rebecca Bridges, membership and affiliates. And the board has approved this year to hire a new coordinator of member and affiliate services. That person is going to be located in our Minneapolis office. And that position will be posted come Monday, March 4th. So for the first time in a number of years, ACB is in a financial position to be able to have a full-time member and affiliates coordinator. I talked to Art a little bit about it here yesterday when we had some discussions, but anything that we could do to help the affiliate here at AB, please let us know. We're really working to try to improve member relations and try to make our affiliates as healthy as they can be. We're really kind of on the downside. We're struggling that we're losing a few of the affiliates because our membership is just aging. There's no other way around. I'm really excited here in Hawaii to see how many young people you have and how vibrant your organization is. So congratulations to all you. We formed for the first time, a Next Generation Committee this year. And it's kind of funny because you always want your ID to be able to show you're 21 or older so you can have a drink, right? And those kind of things. But now, if you join the Next Generation Committee, they look at your ID and you have to be 40 or younger or they won't let you in the door. So that's been kind of... So one of our core members there the other day that was at the legislative seminar, he was 41, so he said, they carded me and I was too old. So but it really was exciting this year for the legislative seminar and the president's meeting. J.P. Morgan Chase had a scholarship program for the Next Generation Committee where we got to invite 10 of our young leaders to come and participate as part of the legislative seminar, all expenses paid. And they had committee meetings, they had happy hours, they had dinners, and these folks were from everywhere. I mean, they were from Washington State, California, Massachusetts, Florida, Kentucky, Colorado, so all over the country. And I really would encourage next year, let's try to get some folks there from Hawaii. What do we say? Woo! I think we're going to do it again. It was really well received. I think what we find is if we can get our young people an opportunity to meet other folks of their same age, their same life experiences, where they can develop friendships, it really goes a long way to hopefully revitalizing and creating that next generation for the American Council of the Blind. From a financial standpoint, things are going very well financially. We had for the third year in a row we were in the black with our budget. So that's been a long time coming for the American Council of the Blind. It's been a lot of hard work from Kim Charlson, the board, and Eric and his staff. We have really kind of spent a lot of time developing. We have our development director is Tom Tobin, and our grant writer is Jolynn Bailey Page. They've really done a lot of hard work to try to get us back to the next level financially. And it's been kind of interesting. We took a little time to analyze where our revenue comes from, and we think a lot of it comes from our members, and it really does. But all of our member and events, so this is our membership dues, our ACB Brenda Dillon Memorial Walk proceeds, our monthly monetary support program, our auctions, our mini mall, the Angels program, all of these fundraising efforts that we do within our membership, they raise about 17% of our revenue each year. So that's great. It's almost $300,000, and it's a wonderful job. But that tells you how much money has to come from sources outside of our membership. So we've been doing, I think, Marjorie Beeman. Everybody give Marjorie a big round. Marjorie is literally an ACB angel. There's just no other way to say it. But one of her many hats that she wears is really helping us with corporate relationships and sponsorships for our convention. What we found through all the outreach that we've had with the Microsofts, the Googles, the Apples, the, you know, they just go on and on, don't they, Martin? There's many, many of them now. That now our corporate relationships, including our consulting services, which is something we're doing new with some of these larger companies, that is now 40% of our annual revenue comes from corporate sponsorships. Wow. So pretty significant of our revenue comes from there. And it's vital to really being able to run the organization. The other thing that we've really been able to do a good job of is we used to have a tremendous thrift store business at one point in time in the American Council of Life. Over the years, we had some issues there. We had a lot of competition come in with Goodwill and Salvation Army and a lot of these other national organizations. So at one point, American Council of Life almost thought about getting totally out of the thrift store business. But we still have two thrift stores remaining. One is in Lubbock, Texas, and one is in Amarillo, Texas. They're only 100 miles apart from each other. But those two thrift stores actually generate almost $300,000 a year of net revenue for ACB, which is another 17% of our revenue. So those are our three biggest revenue sources. We also bring in revenue from other areas, but you can imagine those three alone equal about 75% of our revenue each year. Two wonderful things that have happened in that area. For the first time, we received two wonderful legacy bequests, one from Rhodes Schrader and one from Louis Wagner. Louis Wagner, nobody had even heard of. He was a fireman in Philadelphia, passed away, and left the American Council of Life $1.2 million. And Rhodes Schrader left American Council of Life $600,000. So the two of them together has now helped us form what we're calling, what is now called the Legacy Endowment Fund. So for the first time ever, the board last year approved an endowment fund, an endowment policy for the American Council of Life. So we have a legacy giving society that people can learn more about. But what we're hoping, if you look at your non-for-profits that are really successful year in and year out, they have a well-established endowment fund that allows them to get that operating capital they need year in and year out to operate. And that's really where we're trying to get to with the American Council of Life. So, wish us well. We're off on a journey. We don't want to lose anyone, but. But it's nice if somebody can remember American Council of Life. It really will be a gift that will live in perpetuity and really help the organization forever. So that was a wonderful accomplishment. The other thing is we've now formed an advisory board, which is made up of leaders from across the country. We believe this advisory board is going to be a real opportunity for us to kind of leverage their expertise and help with some of the things that American Council of Life struggles with on a day in and day out basis. So we've got representatives on this advisory board from Microsoft, from Sprint, from legal, from lawyers, Lawyers Association, as well as consulting firms. And we're hoping with these new resources, we're going to be able to really work on four key goals for the advisory board. One is financial stability and growth, which we talked about. Get us to that next level we need to get to be able to do the work of American Council of the Blind. The second is to really work on expanding national awareness. Sometimes I think the American Council of the Blind is the best kept secret in the world. I don't know that that's true, but we really have an opportunity to expand our national awareness and increase membership. I don't know if you all probably know this, but 95% of all blind and visually impaired people do not belong to any consumer group.
Of course.
They're not blinded veterans, they're not NFB members, they're not ACB members. They're not affiliated. 19 out of every 20 blind and visually impaired people. So we've got to go find those people and tell them they need to join the American Council of the Blind. There's no better place to be on earth, right?
That's right.
And last one, I'm probably running out of my time there. Okay. So with that said, I've got to say one more quick thing, and that's to my colleague here to my left, Sasha. And what is happening with the American Council of the Blind, Google, the University of Hawaii, and the National Park Service. So we put a partnership in place 2 years ago where we would work with Google. Funding came from Google. We worked with the University of Hawaii, the National Park Service, and the American Council of the Blind. Our goal is to audio describe all of the visitors' brochures in all 400 national parks across the United States. 420! So far, and we've got funding to do another 30. The American Council of Blind has played the role of being the administrative arm of the grant that we get from Google, but then also to do marketing and outreach. And then we've also provided the consumer experience. We have teams of our members that go and visit each of the parks once the description is done. They provide feedback, and that feedback then goes back into making the audio description better. We're also providing accessibility for the UDE app and testing that on the website. And then the University of Hawaii and their team have done an outstanding job of working with the National Park Service rangers to put together all of the audio description and all the technology to build the application. It's really a wonderful collaborative effort that's out there, and you should be very proud of the work that Sasha and her team have done at the University of Hawaii. So let's give her a big round of applause. I'm not going to take any questions, but we'll be around this afternoon and look forward to talking to you all at the banquet this evening. So thank you.